I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nickel. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Songs in the Key of Laugh,
which I just want to say before we go any further into the episode, David Thames.
Yeah. Phil Nickel.
Thank you. So smooth. That Songs in the Key of Laugh is a play, a quite clever play on the album Songs in the Key of Life
by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. But these are Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Yeah.
So that we thought that was kind of cute. And I've only just discovered that Nick Helm hates the title of our podcast.
I'm sorry, what?
Nick Helm hates the title of our podcast.
What?
He's furious. He gets angry. He was bilious.
He probably did an hour set on it.
He was bilious. He couldn't get over it. Anyway, you're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. I'm Phil Nickel.
I'm David Timms.
And last week we had Jazz Emu.
Oh, he's so good.
Still in the middle of a run at the Soho Theatre. If you guys are interested in going to see him live, check it out. Maybe one of our favourite guests we've had on the show, although we do like all our guests.
We do.
If you've been joining us on Patreon, you know that you can get the episode a week early. So that's quite a nice thing. And we're going to put some other stuff up Patreon or buy Dave and I a coffee. And but coming up in this episode, we're going to be discussing cartoons and songs and cartoons.
This is part
cartoons
part two.
And songs and cartoons part two. We're going to be doing our comedy song contest,
and we're going to be writing our nativity. We're almost there with that.
Yep.
We've only got there's only a couple of weeks to go until Christmas.
Absolutely. And as usual, we have a fantastic interview at the end. Oh, I sounded Yorkshire there. At the end of the podcast. And this week we have Geraldine Quinn.
I expect to go as well. That happens a lot where I'm like, I think I want to go here, but I don't know how to get here. Oh, what note did I just play then? So it's torturous and it's slow sometimes. But then the most popular song in my show, Broad, is I wrote it in 15 minutes. So who knows? Who knows?
Yes, right.
Phil, I want something that's really, really close to your heart.
Yes.
Have you ever written an ad about something really, really close important to you?
I have, actually. I did a lot of training during the lockdowns and stuff.
Okay.
And when we were able to go to the gym, I noticed a lot of the real buff guys, they were built like human martini glasses. They had really tiny legs because they never do leg day. Yeah. They're like martini glasses. And so I devised a product called Butthole Protein that you ingest through your butthole and it makes your legs bigger.
Is there a jingle?
There is. It goes like this. Butthole protein, it's butthole protein, it's butthole protein, a butt. Butthole protein, it's butthole protein, it's butthole protein, a butt. It goes in through your anus and straight down to your legs. Put it in your butthole, it's butthole protein. Everybody! Butthole protein, it's butthole protein, it's butthole protein, a butt. Butthole protein, it's butthole protein, it's butthole protein, a butt. Buy it today. It makes your legs big. Yes, that's... I think we have got a bit of a business going there, Dave.
I think we do,
If you're listening to this podcast and you want any ads for anything,
anything at all, your podcast, just your bathroom breaks.
Yeah, just write to songsofthekeyoflaugh@gmail.com and give a title of Jingle Jangle Jingles.
Jingle, is that what we're called?
Jingle Jangle Jingles, yeah.
Jingle Jangle Jingles.
No, it's after that 1940s song. I've got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle as I go riding merrily along. So we could be Jingle Jangle Jingles.
You're going to say, I've got sperm.
That.
Sting. So last episode, not last episode, two episodes ago,
yeah.
We were discussing cartoon songs and songs in cartoons, themes, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, we just realized how vast that entire subject is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we had so many different theme tunes written down that we had to split it into two episodes at least. So.
We had discussed the Flintstones, and we had played some songs from Family Guy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things we didn't talk about was the Popeye theme. So, I mean, there are great themes. There's like Scooby Doo, Tom and Jerry, Looney Tunes, you know, all that stuff. But Popeye is one of the oldest and one of the most brilliant themes ever, written by a guy called Sammy Lerner from the Fleischer Studios. It debuted in like 1933. I just feel so, it feels still really vibrant. There was a film. Well, it started off as a comic strip, right? Written by, I think, E.C. Sager, I think is his name was. And then that comic strip became a radio show. And in the radio series, he didn't eat spinach. He ate Wheatina.
And Wheatina?
Wheatina.
Which made that?
It's like a wheat product that the sponsors of the radio show. Okay. And in the radio show, they would actually... He would actually eat Wheatina. There's actually a clip you can find online. He eats Wheatina, and they try to fit Wheatina into the actual episodes, as well as being the sponsor of the show.
We'll all be killed together.
Popeye will stop the car, won't you, Popeye?
Yeah, matey. But first I need extra special muscle. Wimpy, me favorite cereal.
What are your requirements, Popeye?
Well, on account I has to use me feet for brakes to stop this here trolley, I need three bones.
Three bones coming up.
Wheatina,
go yourself! Here's one. Here's another. And the third.
Now look at me, muscle.
Yeah, so it went from being a radio, Popeye radio series, then it became a cartoon series. And what was great about using that theme song, I think that's where the theme was developed for the Fleischer Studios, is that Popeye would end the feature of each episode by singing the last few verses.
Okay.
And he would reference the episode's actions, which is now kind of being picked up by modern cartoons. So back in 1933, so it's done by, I think, Family Guy do it, King of the Hill, but they were the end of the episode, that slightly different versions, or the beginning of The Simpsons, slightly different versions.
So they changed the theme tune very, very slightly, depending on what happens in the episode.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and also, they would use the theme tune to speed up or slow down depending on Popeye's energy levels. So if he ate the thing, it'd speed up. Great. And also, even in the live, there was a live action version with Robin Williams. Have I mentioned that already? No, I haven't mentioned that already. So the Robert Altman film, Popeye, I mean, I think it's a brilliant film. I think it really genuinely makes it look like the cartoon. Harry Nilsson does music in it. It's fantastic. It never gets good reviews, but I think it's awesome. I've seen it a few times. I think it's wonderful. But the theme song, Popeye the Sailor Man, one of the most famous theme songs, gets parodied by everybody.
It does. Well, actually, when we were kids, I remember changing the words of it when I was probably about 6 or 7. I mean, we all did in the playground, but we would do, and we thought it was hilarious, obviously.
Right.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. I live in a garbage can. And when I go swimming, I kiss all the women. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. We used to run away screaming like schoolgirls.
Kids just do the best parodies. But I mean, we've discussed all these things before about the sound effects in Tom and Jerry, and you know, going all the way back to silent films, the music is so vastly important, and in cartoons especially, the music
Orchestration is just off the scale. It also is. I think we said this last time, but it's some of the most difficult music that musicians ever get asked to get played.
Yeah,
is these scores for cartoons.
Yeah, and if you're heading back into, like, you know, well, early Walt Disney, before Steamboat Willie and Mickey Mouse, Walt Disney was drawing for Universal Pictures, and he had what was the character called? Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. And Trolley Troubles, I think, was the first one. And that was, if you look at Oswald the Rabbit for Universal, that becomes a good bit of a lookalike for the mouse, Mickey Mouse.
So wait, so Walt Disney,
yeah.
Walt Disney was working for Universal and then went away and worked for Disney.
He worked for Disney and created Mickey Mouse.
If Universal had known, what could they have been, hey?
Yes.
They could have been something.
Oswald the Lucky Rabbit actually has now been bought back by the Disney company.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, but moving on from all those things, you move into the future, and Felix the Cat brings us Tom and Jerry, brings us, you know, Scooby-Doo to Top Cat.
Oh, it's one of my favorite theme tunes ever, Top Cat.
That is a good theme tune, actually. Do you know it?
Yeah, I think I do. Just bear with me one moment.
You're looking for the lyrics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know the lyrics?
No.
No? Okay, yeah, I think it goes... Top Cat, the most effectual Top Cat, whose intellectual close friends get to call him TC, providing hits with dignity. Top Cat, the indisputable leader of the gang. He's the boss, he's the pip, he's the championship, he's the most tip-top Top Cat.
Love it.
Yeah, there you go. I think that with all of these theme tunes and cartoons that we've been speaking of, it's the feeling behind them which is what makes them so wonderful. It's the thought in your head, and it's where it takes you back to. It takes you back to that Saturday morning and running downstairs before mum and dad are awake,
yeah,
and you're sitting underneath the blanket and you've just turned the telly on, and now you're going to watch all the cartoons you possibly can, and there it is. There's Scooby-Doo.
It was Scooby-Doo. For you, Scooby-Doo. For me, Looney Tunes. Like a
band. Oh, absolutely.
When that Looney Tune... that was so very exciting. Where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby Dooby Doo, where are you? We need some help from you now. Come on, Scooby Doo, I see you. You got silver. You're the human being, cause I can see the way you shake and shiver. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size, catches thieves just like thighs. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man. Oh, is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there goes a Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene of a crime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, wealth and fame he's ignored, action is his reward to him. Life is a great big bang up, wherever there's a hang up, you'll find a Spider-Man.
I love that theme tune. I love it. I'm going to go with something slightly more modern.
Okay.
Right? Because I think there's a kind of a genre that we've kind of stayed away from. And this is... I'm going with Pokemon.
Oh.
Right? And this theme tune is... It doesn't just have three chords. It's got loads of them. And so it's great. It's... I played it wrong. I want to be the very best, like no one ever was. To catch them is my real test, to train them is my cause. I will travel across the land, searching far and wide. Teach Pokemon to understand the power that's inside.
Yes.
Pokemon, gotta catch them all. I know it's my destiny. You teach me and I'll teach you. Pokemon, go. gotta catch them all, Pokemon. I got a little bit carried away there, but I like that one. Comedy song competition
contest.
It's definitely a competition. So what have we got this week, Phil?
Well, we've got a good one. Got a great one, actually. It's by a guy from France.
Oh.
He's called Roderick Land.
Bonjour, Roderick.
He's a composer, lyricist, singer, performer, and he wrote King Kong Tonight.
She makes the moon go ape and the monkeys go bananas when the sun goes down on the jungles and savannas. A strong man's dream of an African queen, and I'm King Kong tonight. I met her at the mission where the Jesuits prayed. They had a new position, so we all got laid. Took her down the river in a boat I made, singing I'm King Kong tonight. But her man came home, a half a ton gorilla. He took a look at me and said, I like vanilla. Then he and Mrs. Kong began to get it on, and I was monkey in the middle all night. I ran to the mission in my distress, told them all about it and they wanted her address. Missionary needs a little change, I guess, even King Kong tonight. She makes the moon go ape and the monkeys go bananas when the sun goes down on the jungles and savannas. Strong man's dream of an African queen, and I'm King Kong tonight. Many miles from the jungle and the years have flown. I'm living in Manhattan, so it feels like home. But the women are neurotic and they're bald as bones, and they won't kiss Kong tonight. I miss that monkey that I loved so dear. I even miss her husband, but I don't mean queer. It would just be nice if we could all be here watching King Kong tonight. She made the moon go ape and the monkeys go bananas when the sun went down on the jungles and savannas. A strong man's dream was an African queen, for me, King Kong tonight. Yeah, she makes the moon go ape and the monkeys go bananas when the sun goes down on the jungles and savannas. A strong man's dream of an African queen, and I'm King Kong tonight. King Kong tonight. I'm King Kong tonight. I'm King Kong tonight.
We've been writing a nativity musical, improv nativity dictionary musical. Well, we don't use a dictionary, as you know. We are using David's piano tuning book.
We are, yes.
Here.
So just to fill you in, we're doing the nativity. We've been following it just like you would a children's nativity, but this one is not suitable for children, so please do not let your children listen to it. We hope that this will be ready for Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
We've just got to... Jesus has just been born. Right. That's where we're up to.
He's just been born.
Yeah.
I'm going to open the piano tuning book, put my finger down, and it landed between two words. It said trying to pass.
Trying to.
But that's more of a phrase. Let me do it one more time.
Okay.
Travel.
Travel. Well, that works really well.
That worked out really well.
That worked out really, really well.
And the line before it says another land. But anyway.
Oh, amazing.
Say travel. I'm not making it up. I wish you could be here. You couldn't write it. You could write it. Well, it was written. It's called the Bible.
Okay, so this one's got to be about that big star, hasn't it?
Well, it's got to be about people traveling from another land, I would say.
Oh,
way up in the night sky, I'm a star. Some of you may want to follow this guy, but I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on TikTok. Won't find me on Twitter. I'm more of a show. I'm not all talk. I'm a star. You'll see me in the east. I'm a star. If you're a shepherd, you'll see me above your beasts. I'm the star, the North Star. I'm that star that you follow, and I'm gonna take you to heaven, to the Lord, where he has been given to us in the yard. He's got surrounded by sheep and pigs and ducks and goose and donkeys and all of the things you find in a manger. He's gonna be there, little tiny baby, crying his little tiny ass off, 'cause I'm a star. I'm a star. I'm a star. Look at me, don't look at him. I'm the star. If you'd like to follow me, you can find me on Instagram at star900 or on Twitter at The Star. You'll also see me on Facebook called The Star.
Do you write comedy songs?
I do.
If you do, then please send them in to us for our comedy song competition.
Okay, I will.
You've got the chance to win £200
no.
or a £50 runners-up prize.
Even that would be good.
Send them in to songsinthekeyoflaugh at gmail.com.
That sounds easy enough.
Send them in now. It's a global podcast, this one, isn't it, Phil?
It is indeed. We're going all the way to Australia, to Melbourne, Australia for this one.
Wow.
Via Zoom.
Yeah, I've never been to Australia.
I have, loads of times.
Have you?
Yeah, I got married in Australia. Oh. Anyway. She had me. She hurt me, demon. Anyway, this week's guest is Geraldine Quinn.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's your own fault, but you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize.
So.
And this week their name is
insert name here.
Geraldine Quinn. It's Geraldine Quinn, everybody. Wow.
Hi,
Geraldine Quinn, nominated for the most outstanding show and the Golden Gibbo. The best local independent show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in 2022. Oh my God. But that's only scratching the surface, Geraldine Quinn. I've known you for how many years?
I don't know.
How many? 15 at least. Longer.
Well,
2006?
Oh my God.
2006?
I've done 17 Melbourne International Comedy Festivals. The guitar behind me, you've played. Before.
Yes.
So,
yes, I have.
Yeah. I thought you might have recognized it.
Yeah, didn't we play the Scared Weird Little Guys had a band, a comedy band
yep.
that used to let people up.
Yep, Super that, Band.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which Super Band.
Kind of took over the mantle of a bit when I created a house band for Festival Club, which we did for about 10 years.
Well, okay.
So right. Not sure if it's happening next year, but yes. You know. We had fun. We made magic.
Yeah, right. Of course. Well, why wouldn't it be happening next year?
I don't know. I mean, well, our guitarist is retired, and it's a lot of work. So
yes,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you know what it's like trying to wrangle people for things, but yeah.
This is David Timms. He is my musical director. We run a show called the Cray Cray Cabaret at the Comedy Store once a month in London, and David is he's the leader of the Big-ish band.
It's big-ish. It's not that big, but it can be. Yeah, so it's big-ish.
but it's a very similar concept, Geraldine, is that we'd like to get that project up to the point where we can run it every night. In fact, the Cray Cray ran every night in Edinburgh, but that was before David joined the project.
That sounds fun. But
it was nuts. It was really hard to organize.
It's really, really fun to do. It is really hard to organize because people don't realize how, not all people, but a lot of people don't realize how much work goes into wrangling musicians and organizing structures and rehearsals and keys and all that sort of stuff. And the thing is, it wasn't just a covers band. We always had a theme. So I always pitched a specific theme because Superband's thing was, it was like a live karaoke band. It was like what Mass Aoki is now. And I didn't want to do the same thing as them. So my first pitch for it was, can we do epic rock one year, any decade? We did chick rock, we did art rock, we did goth rock, like just... We just tried to pick something that was specific and then fit into it. And 10 years, people still would contact me and say, can I be in your 80s band? It's like, it's not one.
It's not an 80s band.
It's just not. Yeah. So, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. And you, you've been playing guitar. Are you a piano player as well?
Like two fingers. I play with two fingers.
Well, in that case, everyone's a piano player.
I do. So because unless you have... you're a good guitarist, Phil. I'm an what's the word?
Great guitarist.
I'm
sensational.
I'm a
magical.
A fraction above average. I'm functional. I'm a functional guitarist, but I'm a very good singer. So sometimes I write stuff. And I know the chord in my head and I can't play it on a guitar. That's when my two fingers come out. And then I find another finger and go, it's this note in the chord. And sometimes, I'm not joking, I'm very good in my ear, you see. But sometimes I just Google, what chord are these notes?
What is that? I had a little machine that did that. And before phones had all the fancy computers on, you could just, there's a little box and you could just strum the guitar chord and it would tell you what chord it was. It was just guess the notes.
I think I had one of them when I was about six. A chord finder thing.
Hang on, how are you 12? Like, how young is this person?
He's a young man.
I'm half Phil's age. I'm 32. He's
all right. You're not that. 64. You're not that young.
No, I'm not that young.
He's a virile young man, though. He's just had a baby.
I have.
Oh, you don't have to prove it by having a baby.
And here it is.
Look what my loins have brought forth. Wow. Yeah, whatever.
Actually, just look at my loins, David. Anyway.
You could have just done that. Just done that. And you get arrested and you go to jail and then it's all done. No apps for you.
I put a little baby's bib on mine and say, look at my child. It looks like me. Anyway, that's because I'm a bit
officer?
Of a dickhead. Exactly. I want to explore this a little bit further. So you're obviously a fantastic singer, great singer. It's extraordinary, actually. But are you a trained singer?
No.
That's all naturally.
I'm an irritating person who never trained. So there's definitely bumps and scrapes and stuff that better singers than me, I kind of go, I should probably iron that out, shouldn't I? I have things I could learn. But a lot of it was just trying to sing like other people and seeing and doing what I guess trained singers will do is just try to stretch their range. But I would just do it because I really want to sing such and such a song. So I'll practice. In my late teens, maybe early 20s, actually it would have been early 20s because it was the 90s. So I sang a lot of Divine Comedy because Neil Hannon does wonderful. I love his melodies, and he really pushes the full range of his voice. So, and a lot of like Kate Bush is in a different, she's not in the most comfortable range for me, but that got me up there. And you just keep stretching it like a muscle and whatever else. But my bridge is bumpy. There's lots of like billy goats and trolls around my vocal bridge.
What got you into music and comedy in the first place?
What a strange question, young man.
Well, are your parents musical? Are your family musical? Or it's like, were you raised in a convent? Were you sang hymns?
I do have a couple of great aunts who were nuns, and my uncle is a priest. But no, my parents love music. They're not musicians, but they love music. Right. I do have a lot of cousins, especially on my dad's side. My uncle Frank was a musician. My cousin Loretta's a musician, Matt's a musician, and I'm talking cousins from different families. So my dad's dad's from a family of about 10 and mum's from a family of about 10. So I have dozens and dozens and dozens of first cousins, and there's seven of us as well. So,
You're still not married?
Yeah, I don't. To my cousins? No.
An old Australian tale, isn't it? As we make.
But also, don't need to be, because have more than 20 nieces and nephews, so the breeding's continuing fine, guys. Don't need mine. It can stay vacant.
Vacancy. No vacancy.
So it's funny that a lot of the family on my dad's side in particular have been quite musical. Might be the kind of, they're also depressive and we self-medicate. Oh. So there's that. Must be the Irish side. That's that.
Yes. Well, I think drinking and goes with the song, doesn't it? I mean,
of course it does.
You know, why, I wonder, do you find you sing more when you're drunk? David?
No. Me? One, without a shadow of a doubt. Edinburgh's the perfect, or any fringe festival is a perfect example of musicians and performers singing far too much after having a drink, surely. And do you do that, Geraldine? I don't know. I find that there's absolutely no chance that I won't sing Bohemian Rhapsody every single night at the top of my voice as I'm walking down the mile. At 3 a.m. So,
The difference between you and I is that I occasionally get paid to sing. So I need to protect it. So I don't sing down the wrong mile. I'm not saying you don't get paid to sing. I'm saying the difference is I get concerned about what my voice is going to be able to do. Because every festival, someone will come up to me and someone will say, I'm losing my voice, what do I do? And I'm like, don't go to a bar and don't talk. That's just 100%. Don't talk.
Yep. Sleep.
I get it all the time. And my voice, because we do these interviews, tend to be on a Tuesday after I've had a long weekend of screaming my guts out. You know what my act is like, Geraldine, so I'm screaming my guts out. And then I can't really sing for the singing bits in our podcast, and it's starting to annoy me, really.
Oh, Philip.
It's really funny.
I just should learn.
Because a similar thing's actually happening to me this week. So I've got a gig in regional Victoria. It's about 5 hours drive from Melbourne in Victoria, Australia. And I'm trying to herd the cats of the musicians for a band rehearsal for a mate's wedding. And one of the only days they've got is either the day that I'm coming back from that regional show, so six-hour drive, or it's the night before I'm in a studio recording.
Right.
And yes, technically the night before would be easier, but I just went, if I don't even get enough sleep, my voice is going to be stuffed. So I'd rather ruin myself on that driving back from Portland gig and do a rehearsal because I don't need to be singing Bonnie Tyler for a friggin' wedding right before I'm about to do an album that we've been trying to get into the studio 6 years now and ruin it for everybody
and you're
else.
Recording it. Exactly. And I've made that mistake. I was asked to do something for BBC Radio 4, sing the a cover of a Proclaimers song because they couldn't get the rights for the Proclaimers song for the radio series. And I can sing the song, But I went out the whole night before. In fact, Kirsty Newton was with me, and we both went out the night before. And she was so hungover, she vomited all the way through the recording. And I couldn't sing the lyrics. She sounds amazing on it because she's a pro. But we were both in pretty bad shape. In fact, I think the whole band was with us, Ivan Shepherd and Matt Blair. I think all of us were pretty bad. So don't do that.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. And that, the other thing about drinking and singing is, what does drinking do? You just lose all your sense of kind of awareness of where your voice is, and you lose your inhibitions, and you just go, I can do all of Paradise by the Dashboard Light, no problem. Yes, exactly.
I am Prince. I know I am.
It sounds amazing. So, Geraldine, the little bit that I know about you, and I mean, I've known you for a long time, and I've seen you perform many times, but you continue to record music. You continue to record albums. How many albums do you have now?
Six.
And this will be the seventh one you're going to record?
This one's a Christmas album that's actually a friend of mine, Casey Benedetto, who is a magnificent songwriter and very funny.
Yeah.
Tim knows him, so he's not a bad option if you want another Australian.
I know Casey.
Yeah. You know Casey? Yeah. So you know Casey's great. So we do a Christmas show every year called A Swingin' Bell of Christmas. It's mostly a lot of original songs of his. I've written one for it as well. And there's lots that have been written over the last 6 or 7 years that we haven't ever got into the studio to record. Right. So now that we've got through all the pandemic stuff, we're like, let's get into a studio and just get, because basically we've got people that come back every year. We sold out the Brunswick Ballroom last week. We sold out two nights in a day and a half, and that's about 270-300 seater. And had to put on an extra show. So there are really dedicated punters who are gagging to have a copy of some of the songs that we've been doing in the interim, including my own. Even though I did a recording of my own song, we like to try to do it live with the actual the regular annual band. So that's what we're doing there. I've got a bit of a backlog of stuff I haven't been recording, because I think the last one I did, Phil, I stupidly pressed physical copies.
There's
a lot under my bed still. And that was 7 years ago.
People still buy them, though. I just read this week, and this, I don't know if this is absolutely true, that Taylor Swift just had the top 10 singles on the top 10 singles charts in America, was all 10 places. That'd only been nearly done once before, 9 places by someone ridiculous like Prince or something like that.
All top 10, and so
I looked, I kind of don't know anything about Taylor Swift, to be honest, and I looked into it and realized that they're talking about physical copies. They're talking about people are buying albums and CDs. I'm like, who does that? Why are you doing that?
I think it encompasses all the downloads as well.
I think this chart is like the hard copy chart. So I think there is a market for it out there. I just
need to get about 1,000 Taylor Swift fans to buy my merch.
Sorted. You're done.
Call your album Taylor Swift.
I'm sure they're really going to relate to all those songs I wrote about what would happen if the entirety of Melbourne shut down and there was no live music, which I wrote 10 years before a pandemic hit and the whole of Melbourne shut down and there was no live music.
Wow. Was the song accurate? Like, because obviously you were telling the future.
It was a whole concept album.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a whole concept album.
Mind blown.
Yeah. I was like, and you know what it came from, interestingly? There was a bit of an issue around the 2010s in Victoria where it happened in Sydney. The government got a bit excited about liquor licensing laws and that places were staying open too late. And so if you had live music, you had to have a security guard. And Victoria brought in a similar thing. Sydney was where Sydney just kind of put a curfew on. This is like, so we're talking 2009, 2010 sort of thing. And Victoria did a similar thing, and it was just driving little venues, like a little cafe in Ormond or something that would have a jazz guy come and play on a guitar would be required to pay for a security guard because there's live music playing, and they saw that link between live music and some kind of fight breaking out, because they were conflating bigger gigs and some occasional consequences of the alcohol consumption with playing live at all. So venues just stopped booking musicians because they said, we can't pay for a security guard. So it was a pretty big misstep, and that was the main inspiration for that album, because it was like, Melbourne's so known for music, for live music. There's so many bands that have come out of Melbourne, and it isn't the same as it was even in the 90s. It's certainly not when, you know, the Cold Chisels of the world were doing pub circuits. So what would happen if a city basically so well known for that scene couldn't, nobody could play? Because gentrification does it as well. People move in, go, this is a cool suburb. Oh, no, that pub's really loud. We'll shut it down.
Yeah. Well, that's when 1990, when I first came over to Melbourne and staying in Fitzroy, and then a bit North Fitzroy, and just all the pubs down there, all great big pubs, all great lovely old buildings.
Yep.
From there all the way to the Esplanade, all the way through the city, these pubs had live music almost every weekend. The Punters was one of the most rocking gigs I've ever been to in a pub. Saw the Weddings, Parties, Anything there, and saw the Gadflies there, and saw these amazing Australian bands. And the culture around music in Melbourne was exceptional, as there was so many horn players, so many great guitar players, bass players, drummers, and all doing, like, there was a weird lounge culture in the 1990s, if you remember, Geraldine, was like bands playing sort of like tuba versions of like hit songs, but in a pub on a Sunday afternoon, packed out with people, you know, all paid $3 to get in. It was phenomenal.
And it wasn't just weekends. It was every night. So you'd go to the Rainbow Hotel and there'd be something on every night. I'm going to get his name wrong. Is it Paul Williamson? It's Jane Clifton's husband. He's a sax player, jazz guy. Heaps. I mean, I saw Corky and the Juice Pigs at Prince Patrick when Will Anderson was supporting you. So So I was probably 9, 10, 20. That would have been mid-90s.
Yes, that would have been, it would have been 90, 91, 92, in fact, I think.
I was still in high school then, sorry.
Okay.
It would have been after 92, let's just say that.
I was already 6 years into comedy career.
I would have driven, and I didn't get my license until I was 19. It would have been 1996 or 7.
Right. Yes, Will was I think it was his first year at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And now look at him now.
I know. It's weird being, it's so weird.
So before we started this interview, we were talking about Tim Minchin, because we were talking about something that Tim had done on our show. And you were saying you started around the same time as the lovely Tim Minchin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We met in October 2004. Mm-hmm. And I think he'd done Perennium, Millennium, or whatever the name of that first show was at the Butterfly Club when it was in South Melbourne. And
I remember,
then did his first proper show at Comedy Festival in 2005, which was my first year as well. And then, bye.
Yeah, I remember hearing, I was at that festival. I'm not sure what year that was, 2005.
Five, yeah.
And all I remember is everyone said to me, have you gone to see Tim Minchin? You see, because I was kind of known as, at that point, more of a musical comedian because of Corky and the Juice Pigs. It was like a blast of success.
Yeah. Well, Melbourne and Australia have both got, in general, have got a really good musical comedy kind of pedigree. So Tripod was already going for ages. Doug Anthony All Stars as well.
Yep, and Scary Little Guys. Leno and Woodley, who were the Found Objects.
Yes. I saw the Found Objects when they were the Found Objects. And the third one, Shane? He's from Wagga Wagga, which is where I'm born.
Yeah. So. It's not Shane. It's
What's his name? Oh, I'm so sorry.
Shane is from the Umbilical Brothers.
No, well, there's lots of Shanes, Phil.
Well,
haven't confused my Shanes. I've just forgotten the name of the tall Shane. Blonde guy in Found Objects.
That's what they called him, which is why he's no longer in the band. moving forward through Australian musical comedy culture, we went through that. Then there was a Tripod were the next big ones. Then there's Axis of Awesome, mm-hmm. who had obviously a huge hit with their four chord routine.
Yep.
And then you got Sammy J.
Yep.
Who's been in a couple of plays or been a play that I've produced and I've known for a long time. There is so many. We had Jude.
You've had Jude Pearl.
Jude Pearl. On. From, well,
I was in the same way. Eddie Perfect too. I was in the sort
Eddie
of the
Perfect,
same.
Eddie Perfect, Beetlejuice, the author of Beetlejuice. Yeah,
I was in the same kind of wave as Eddie and Tim. Yeah. And look at me. Sorry, I'm white knuckling their coattails, guys. I do have a career.
You're not.
It's just.
You're not. That's.
Look, I'm just a bit more fringe.
You're on songs in the key of laugh.
Could it be any better?
I know.
But also because look, obviously we have this. I mean, we kind of share that in a way. I mean, I've been in Cork the Juice Pigs. Of course, we were like huge and on Mad TV and everything. But as a solo act, I sort of drift along, you know, in the fringe world, in the world of fringe, and I don't think there's anything. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. You're about to go into a recording studio and record with Casey Bonetto, I think. Didn't he write Keating, the musical?
He did,
That was one of the first things I heard about Casey. So Casey Bonetto, you will love, because he's a multi-instrumentalist, isn't he? But he plays piano at least.
I did ask him once, what's your main instrument? What do you feel like the most, this is my thing? And he said rhythm guitar. But he can basically play everything. He plays drums, he plays keys, he plays bass.
The guy, and also he's a great singer and just a fantastic personality. But I don't know where he stands because I haven't been in Australia for that long. But he's one of those people you think that he should be and possibly will be known worldwide at some point because he's too talented to be overlooked. But
you're right about that. He is one of those people.
He may choose to float in working circles where he doesn't face that.
Industry knows who he is, and I talked about him a little bit in my nominated show this year, Broad. I was talking about that Christmas gig that we do, and I was saying, well, I co-host it with Casey Bonetto, and if you don't know who he is, you really should, because he's just so talented, so prolific, and an incredibly generous person and performer as well. So he. You know,
yeah, he's a sweetheart.
He's given me so much work in the sense of when I feel like an industry's not going, oh, Geraldine's right for this because they'll pick somebody else. Casey will go, no, we'll get Geraldine in. So the fact that I've got to co-host that Christmas gig, that hugely popular, sold out in a day and a half Christmas gig for I think it's 7 or 8 years I've been the co-host now. That's incredible for me. That's when you feel down about stuff. It's like, well, I get to do that. That's the funnest gig of the year with my friends. Yeah. And that's really cool.
I think you are underselling yourself.
it's my family. Deep. It's the family Super. Way.
How many years? Yeah. Well, I guess it's healthy.
I've just kind of sat and listened, right? I think that you're both underselling yourselves massively. I've listened through several albums worth of your stuff over the last few days, Geraldine, and it's fantastic.
Oh my God.
It's fantastic. Your voice is absolutely wonderful. and Phil is, I mean, you are one of the, if you talk to any comic. And I've now had the massive pleasure of meeting so many through Phil. Talk to any comic, they just say, I just love to watch him. Because you watch Phil on stage and it is just, it's mind-blowing. And Geraldine, I haven't had the pleasure of coming to watch a show of yours, but I have listened through your live album and I can hear that people are eating out of the palm of your hand with everything that you're doing. Seriously, though, you sound so good. Your songwriting is so, so spot on. and the way that you kind of the way that your live album, the last one that I listened to, the which one was it?
I've only got one.
The Jarvis Cocker.
Scream Jarvis Cocker when
Scream
you're losing.
Scream Jarvis Cocker. Yes, when you're losing. That it's fantastic. It's got like it's got a beautiful arc in it. It's really, really nice.
You're being over generous, so thank you. I like performing live. I never felt like I captured my voice very well in studio. Do you get that feel? Like you sort of feel like, I think that's why we want to do that Christmas album live, because there's something about that frisson of, it took me a long time to learn how to sell a story in a song as a singer while you're in a tiny booth with no one there, you know? Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, it's hard.
I've got loads of recordings of studio records of me, and I just think, I'm overthinking it. I can sing that so much better, or I feel tight and it's not loose. And I guess it's like anything. It's the more you do it, the better, the easier it becomes.
It's so interesting to learn, though, just to actually finally get into that position and go, well, okay, I'll produce it myself, and I'll pay for the studio, and I'll get everybody in, and you'll learn a lot about how you record. And now I've got better stuff at home. I'm still learning. Okay, I never had that background that my late brother did or Casey did, where they were nerds about tech and they really got into it in their teens. And I'm 47 going, I need to learn this just so I can kind of, so it's cheaper. But I'm also excited about, I should be able to learn this and get better at it and get better equipment and use a vocal writer and understand that better. And the more I understand it, the more I'm going to be able to do. And that's pretty exciting as well.
I think something that's helped me with that, going into a studio and then, you know, actually selling my voice when I sing something, is working with the right producers and then seeing how these producers will speak to their singers. And I've had the most unbelievable pleasure of working with an Australian, Mike Chapman, who wrote simply the best for Tina Turner. He wrote Lonely This Christmas and lots of very, very famous songs.
Call Me by Blondie.
Well, he did. He produced all of Blondie's, that first album.
Oh my gosh.
First three albums.
It's a sweet.
Yeah, so
he's oh my God.
Huge producer. Care.
You better watch out if you got long black hair.
Oh, we've got a Fox on the Run bit in one of my songs. We just went, right, we want to do that Fox on the Run thing.
But watching him in a studio and watching him work with a singer completely changed the way that I now do it. And now I now get the chance to produce and work with so many different singers, and it's wonderful. And I now feel I can get so much more out of them. But it's all about being able to take that live sound and find the right person who can kind of blend it in the studio as well. And sometimes you can be lucky enough to do it yourself.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. You made a great point, and you saw me giving you a massive thumbs up there, like some kind of Ocker parody. But like when I was, one of the best things about, because so Casey produced You're the Voice, Songs for the Ordinary by an Anthemaniac, my album, which was my Gibbo winning show 11 years ago. And I just sat, it was at his home studio, and the hours and hours and hours of just sitting there and watching somebody do that was invaluable. Same with Modern Day Made in Art, which was another album in 2014. I sat there in Steve Hearn's studio and just, because I was there every step of the way, because I'm producing it as a, you know, it's got to sound like this. These are my songs. And then get the whole band in, and we did, Fox Ponsing was alive. We pretty much had the band in the studio straight away. And last gig in Melbourne, which was that huge concept album, we put down the drums and the bass first, and then I just got in who I could get in when I could get them in and built it up. And that was another way of producing an album. And it's all been tremendous to learn from people who do know how to do it. And you do, you suck it up. You just sit there going, teach me the things.
Yeah. It's so true. Can we talk a bit about your songwriting? Because you've mentioned that that you play. You play a bit of guitar, and I know I've seen you playing the guitar, and you definitely can. But what about all of these huge arrangements that you have for these big show tunes that you do? Where so I'm guessing that you write your lyrics first, maybe, and then you get your band involved to write your big band parts. How does it work?
I don't know. I drop Casey's name a lot because when I was trying to, he worked with me on You're the Voice and Last Gig, and I got really, really stuck. And when he wrote Keating, the musical, if you've got listeners who aren't Australian, by the way, Paul Keating was a Labor Prime Minister. Yeah. He was the treasurer under Bob Hawke. Anyway, look him up. It's really good. It's a good musical. And he said...
And it's an interesting story, the Keating story.
It's an interesting story. And he is still kicking, and he does still get on the news sometimes, and he is still as erudite as he always was. But anyway, he said, when I got stuck, I just picked a genre and the story and went, okay, well, I'm going to try and write this in this genre. And... that was actually a great way to get out of my head. So I don't know if you heard my really long mini rock opera about the Edinburgh Festival called Festival Rhapsodical. That is about 7 or 8 tiny songs that we just wove together. So, and that was 100%. I said, I don't know how to write this, in case we just write a ballad bit, just write, not exactly a country bit, like just pick a genre and just go.
Yeah.
And then I just... kind of with my stupid little hands, fumbled my way around the guitar or a keyboard and went, okay, I can transition from that little piece to this key for that little piece that way. So I'm kind of not fluent, if that makes sense. I know what's in my head and I can kind of fudge around it and I can say, this is basically an E flat something, but this note's different. And then a more fluent person can tell me what it is. So sometimes I've got a bit of a snippet of a melody in my head or a snippet of a line, a lyric that suggests a melody, because if you're writing, particularly when you're storytelling songs, which I tend to think of what I write more than comedy songs, you need to have a good grasp of the scan of language and where the stresses usually are so that you can fit that to how your melody's shape works. And the meaning is really easy for the audience to get straight away. And you get better at that the more you do it, for sure.
Yeah.
So you might have that little snippet and then go, sometimes not being that great at an instrument can take you somewhere you didn't expect to go as well. That happens a lot where I'm like, I think I want to go here, but I don't know how to get here. Oh, what note did I just play then? So it's torturous and it's slow sometimes. But then the most popular song in my show, Broad, is I wrote it in 15 minutes. So who knows? Who knows?
Yes, right. Yeah, there's no – I mean, it is obviously – I think it's usually the way for me that the thing that comes out in one lump is the most satisfying – thing. And then, but there's other songs I've spent so much time trying to make work and rearranging and trying to, I know that it's going to, and never, and there's something satisfying about finishing it, but I always feel the ones that come out in one are, I don't know if it's just because I like to think it's inspired or if it's because it's just easier.
Well,
you writing these songs in that method, though, considering that you're, in your own words, not a great guitar player, a two-finger piano player, means that there's something going on musically in your head.
100%. It's just about translation. So I'm just not, I can hear it and I can't. And Casey's, we've had this conversation too, and he said the same thing. He's like, there's definitely stuff I can hear going on in my head that I can't play. And sometimes I'll take it to a band. Not all my songs go to a band. Sometimes it might be an accompanist. Sometimes I'll just build it myself. But sometimes I'll take it to a band and go, okay, this is the rough chords. This is the rough structure. These are your reference points for what I want it to sound like. For example, there's a song called Scrag Fight on Swanson Street on Last Gig in Melbourne, which is about a 1970s Melbourne and some sharps having a fight. It's a subculture of Melbourne, if you look up the Sharpies. Yeah. And in it, I wanted the bass to be a downstroke with a plectrum. The bass player on that was Ash Smith. Fantastic. Great singer. Melodic as fuck. Like, he's great. Just went, I don't know, I think it might be. And he's just fingering. Sorry to use the word fingering, but it's in context. And I had to stop him and go, it's a downstroke with a plectrum and I'm not negotiating, because it's the vibe of the song. It's 1973 Sharpies on Swanston Street. It's a downstroke with a plectrum. So when I know, but it's good to have that little crack of, I've picked you to play in the band because there's something about the way you play that I think will bring something to it that maybe I haven't thought of. So it's just continuing to shift. It's all tools, I reckon. I think if you're stuck, picking a genre tool can work. And other days you go, I definitely want it to sound like this. Knowing when to quit on a song, knowing when I've spent 3 weeks and it's just not working, I'm going to park it. It's just keep – everything's method. Same with acting. You go to a school and they tell you that the only way to act is this way. It's this – it's the method, or it's that or whatever. But they're all tools, and if they work to help you get where you want to go, great. If they don't work, pick another tool. That's what I think.
I think that's a very good spot on.
I think a lot of our listeners are also not only interested in musical comedians and musical songs, comedy songs, but they're also purveyors of the art form. And I think that's going to be quite an inspirational thing for them. And I've always thought that the Juice Pigs started out, we were just actors. I happened to play a bit of guitar, and we just used to lark about and make each other laugh, and we never thought of ourselves as musicians. We didn't ever, I to this day don't consider myself a musician. I just happen to play the guitar, but I don't, you know, I know the circus.
I do. I think of you as, see, I call myself a musician before I call myself a comedian, but I think of you as a musician. But I also know you're very good at comedy. Well,
you are both definitely musicians, without a shadow of a doubt.
Anyway, slappy, slappy, backy, backy.
I've got a question though. So I've noticed that you've got your own podcast as well.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay, which was all about cabaret. There is a question that me and Phil often ask each other, because we do a night that is called
Cray Cray Cabaret.
But what is cabaret? if you were to put a few words to it, I've got my idea of it, Phil's got his idea of it, but you, as a purveyor of cabaret in such a wonderful way, do you have some words that you could put into that fence?
Pandora. Oh, you've opened up a box. So the time that Tim mentioned and I were starting, and Eddie Perfect was the first one that kind of took off. I think Tim used to be his musical director very early on. Yeah. The time that they were starting out, cabaret in Australia anyway, was a bit of a dirty word. So it was kind of even though we had that musical comedy legacy, it was a bit, it's not as good as other things. Or if you're from Sydney, it's what music theatre people do when they haven't got a job.
Right.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, Eddie is brilliant as well, and then Tim exploded in, frankly, an unprecedented way, and in a way that I don't think will really happen again, not in that course of events anyway. I think that did a lot to change it. And I'm not sure where we are now. I think I got asked if I wrote my own songs for a long time, which was interesting. And I complained about it. I complained about it so much. I complained about it to a colleague of mine, and he said, because I wasn't playing my own songs. So that's when I started playing guitar more, because I realised, and there's sexism in this, don't get me wrong, it 100% is. People thought I was just singing them. So for me, and then I ended up going on to be I was on the Green Room Awards Association panel for cabaret, which is the live performance awards in Victoria, in Australia, so our state. And I was the chair for a few years too, so I saw a lot. And it can be so many things. I fought real hard to say, I think a lot of drag performers and a lot of burlesque performers are kind of bleeding into cabaret. Mm. But the idea of it to a general public, a broader general public, I think still gets seen as uncool because they've got this concept of it being a thing of, I don't know, somebody doing jazz hands and a parody of a song with an accompanist and changing the lyrics. That can be brilliant. Weird Al Yankovic is the greatest at the changing of the lyrics.
Yep. Yep.
But it can be very bad. So it's more general public not realizing how broad it is, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so many people who started off wanting to be musicians, like me and Tim and Jude, went, okay, well, that's a really impossible industry. We're reasonably charming and funny. Let's try this. So... Mm. That's why people like us end up in this space. And that can be a rod for your own back as well, because you can have people go, oh, but you're just a singer. But you don't actually just do straight stuff. You don't act or you don't do stand-up or, and you get in that headspace. Yep. I'm just saying life's hard, kids.
Yeah. Well, life seems doesn't seem – your life doesn't seem hard to me, Geraldine Quinn. You think of all of the joy that you've brought to all these people, and you'll continue to. God bless you. We always ask our guests at the end of the interview to sing a little number for us, or do a little live performance for us. And we know that you're already ready to rock there. So you've written a Christmas song. You're doing the Christmas album, and you've written a Christmas song. And you're going to play this Christmas song for us now. Tell us a little bit about it before you play it.
Sure. So basically, I said before, I've co-hosted this very popular annual Christmas gig. Annual Christmas gig seems like a tautology. Most Christmas gigs are annual.
But a one-off Christmas gig.
Never to be repeated. Christmas gig. I mean, Catholics have never done anything that's never to be repeated. Look at Easter. So anyway, one year I said to Casey, because a lot of the songs we do in the first half of the show, the first half's original, second half's carols, and the first half is a lot of Casey songs because he writes heaps. And I said, Tripod have brought songs, and we've done Tim's song, White Wine in the Sun, and Eddie wrote a song for it, a wonderful song called Trampoline. It's gorgeous. What about me? I should do a Christmas song. And he's like, yeah, you can do a Christmas song, of course. It's just one rule. It's got to be positive. And it took me 4 years to come up with something. So that's because I don't like Christmas very much, because my family's huge and Irish, and we have got a lot of intergenerational trauma. So I realized that my way in was a positive Christmas song about being a single person in your family with no kids who gets to go home whenever she wants. Like the Son of God. And every single Christmas is insane. Six sets of in-laws to cram in like a peak out of Tokyo train. While they run from brunch to lunch to tea in a tizzy, I'll pour another gin and crank up Thin Lizzy.
Fantastic. That's Geraldine Quinn. Geraldine, thanks for coming on Songs.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for responding to my bullying emails.
Arms twisted, interview done. That was Geraldine Quinn, everybody.
Bye, Geraldine.
Bye, Geraldine.
Bye.
Goodbye, adios, farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're gonna have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye. Goodbye!
Ah, Geraldine Quinn.
Yes, that was the amazing Geraldine Quinn. That was great. Wasn't that fun?
So much fun.
And the length of time I've known her, she's just one of the good guys. She's one of the good ones. One of the good guy, you let us say that anymore? She'd like that. Geraldine, you're one of the good guys. Well, this has been Songs of the Key of Laugh, episode 7.
And we must have mentioned about 50-odd cartoons over these two episodes.
Yes. Come back and join us next week. If you'd like to see more or hear more of Geraldine Quinn, why not visit her at her website, geraldinequinn.com.
Or you can visit her on her socials, on Twitter, which is at Geraldine Quinn, or on Instagram, at Geraldine Quinn Official.
And if you'd like to support our podcast, go to patreon.com/songsthekeyoflaugh and give us a little bit of your dough. Become a patron.
Or you can go visit us at coffee.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh. We'll see you next week.
Bye!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.